حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. What made Karbala special was the quality of ithar that was demonstrated by the companions of Imam Hussein and the children of Imam Hussein and Imam Hussein himself. The quality of ithar, or the virtue of sacrificing what one has for the other, is what made Karbala special. Martyrdom is found in many other places in Islam, in many other battles in the time of the Prophet, and in any other time. You see that they were martyrs, people were shaheed. In Badr you also had martyrs. In Uhud you also had martyrs, and you had sincere martyrs like Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet, who was Sayyid al-Shuhada before Imam Hussein. And you see that you had these martyrs, and they died in the way of Allah. They gave their lives sincerely for Allah's cause. But what made the martyrs of Karbala special and unique, in a way that Imam Hussein had claimed and stated, that the companions that I have, no other Imam and no other person had such companions. So when we look at what was special in them, it was the quality of ithar that they demonstrated. How they sacrificed for the other. How they gave up what they had for the other. And this quality is what makes a mu'min and a believer special. In the riwayat and narration I read yesterday, in which Musa is looking and seeing the special place and the closeness that the ummah of the Prophet has with Allah, and Allah tells him why this ummah is so close to Allah, is because of the fact that they have ithar, that they do ithar amongst each other. They sacrifice what they have for one another. This is what makes those people special. Ithar is something that you do not get in a day or overnight. It's a quality that requires years of work and years of effort in order to build it in oneself. And when Allah tests you on this quality, the test is very hard. It's very difficult. The test doesn't come easy when it comes to virtues. Again, if you all can close in, inshallah, on the ladies' side also, and on the men's side, inshallah, if you can close in up so that the people who are coming in have room in the back. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So in order for us to acquire this ability and acquire this virtue of ithar, it is not easy. And when Allah tests us, when Allah wants to test us, when we claim to have ithar, when Allah tests us on virtues, the tests are not easy also. When Allah makes those tests, He doesn't make them easy. He doesn't have any mercy when He's giving His test. The mercy of Allah is not related to virtues. The mercy of Allah is related to sins. In other words, when a person sins, he can expect the mercy of Allah. But when a person is trying to acquire virtues, and when he's trying to acquire qualities, Allah doesn't show any mercy. There is no mercy of Allah when it comes to acquiring virtues and qualities and fadilat and merits. Let me explain that. Send loud salawats. See, if a child is in school and this child is able to get an A, if a child is able to get an A, and he's able to score an A, if he gets a B in the test, and the teacher looks at that B, and says, you know what, let me help this child, let me give him an A. By giving him an A, the teacher doesn't help the growth of this child. The teacher is hindering his growth by showing him mercy where he's capable of achieving excellence. He's able to get an A, but he gets a B by helping him at that place. The teacher doesn't help him by showing him mercy. Yes, if the child is getting an F, then at that point the teacher can say, all right, you know what, let me give him a D so he doesn't feel bad. Because a kid is a failure anyway. Maybe he'll feel better if I give him a D. Right? If I give him a D, he might feel better. You see, when someone is failing, then the concept of mercy can apply. But when someone is striving to achieve excellence, then mercy at that stage only makes him weaker. It doesn't help him. That's why when someone is faltering and falling down, then you show mercy by helping him. But if someone is trying to reach a peak and striving to climb a mountain and reach a peak, and you want to help him, he's not able to make it, so you go and help him, that doesn't help him. Why? Even if he gets there, it's not his achievement anymore. It won't be his achievement anymore if he reaches it with someone else's help. When someone is trying to reach excellence, he doesn't want help reaching excellence. Why? Because he wants to make the achievement of becoming excellent. He wants to become excellent. That's why when Allah wants to show mercy, He doesn't show mercy to those people who want to be excellent. He shows mercy to those people who are falling down and sinning and in the negative, so that He can help them to walk, He can help them to go along. But Allah doesn't show mercy on those people who want to acquire virtues, who want to become great. Because when you want to become great, then He says, it's your achievement, go ahead, you're alone. Walk on this path alone. My friends, when you want to strive for excellence, then you're all alone. Because the achievement will be yours. Because what you acquire will be yours. Don't expect that Allah will make it easy for you. That Allah's going to make it, you know, easy so you can get up. Allah knows that's not what's going to help you. In fact, those who strive for excellence don't want that. They want to achieve it themselves. This is why when we are talking about virtues, when we're talking about qualities, when we're talking about acquiring, for example, ifar, and ifar is one of the higher levels, the higher levels of virtues to be acquired. When we're talking about that, then you have to understand that on this path, you're all alone when you walk. When you strive here, you're all alone. Sometimes this question can be asked that, Maulana, you know, we are you know, trying to get out of the negative, and you're talking about these higher level virtues to gain. Why should, I mean, you know, it's easier right now. What we need is something more basic. Something more basic. You see, you know, and a lot of times, you know, we do have this in mind that, you know, we ask speakers or ulama who come here that, you know what, there are problems here that are very basic for us and we need to deal with those problems. You see that we have kids, you know, who do haram things, they're involved in wrong things and doing bad things. And you're talking about ithar here. You're talking about ithar, you know, and that Imam Hussein's companions did ithar. You know, I mean, these kids, you know, I mean, you know, if you just let them know that, listen, drugs is bad, you know, then, you know, that will help them right now. But I want to tell you something, right? I want to tell you something, my friends, that is how Allah deals with Shias, with believers. How He deals with believers. Right? When a person, you see, when a person who has the capability of achieving greatness, meaning if you have it in yourself to achieve greatness, if you are a genius, then whenever you want to put a, let's say a student who is genius, whenever you want to put a student who is excellent, if you put him in the average class with all the rest of the students, and you see that his growth is an accelerated growth, he is learning faster than others. In fact, he's a genius. If you put a genius with other kids, then what happens is that by putting him with other kids and giving him the same workload as other kids, you stunt his growth. You stunt his growth. That's why kids who learn fast, they're put in accelerated programs. Why? Because they know that if they are put in any other program, then their growth will be stunted and they won't grow as fast as they could. So what happens is that they're put in programs where there's more workload for them, more challenges for them, so that their growth can be to the level that they can grow. Understand this. This the same way. When we look at, when Allah looks at a mu'min, when He looks at a believer, just like Musa looked at the believers and saw them so high and capable of achieving so much greatness, then it shows that there's a capability in believers to achieve greatness. So now Allah knows that you are able, you are capable of achieving that greatness and achieving that high level of status. So if He puts you with all the rest of the people, if He makes you go into the same class as the rest of the people and gives you the normal workload that kuffar get and munafiqeen get, then your growth is stunted. Why? Because you're capable of learning faster and growing at a faster pace. That's why you see that Allah, when He looked at you, He's saying, listen, I don't want to treat you like others. I want to give you more challenges. So if you see that your life has more challenges than others, it's because Allah regards you as capable of achieving that greatness. He regards you like that. So you should be proud of the fact that Allah is challenging you more and giving you more challenges in life. That you have more on your plate than other people do. That you have extra things to worry about that other people don't have to worry about. Really, look at the life of the kuffar. Do they have to worry about haram? They don't, right? I mean, you know, that's one less headache for them. Do they have to worry about wajibat and obligations? No. That's another less headache for them. You see that? And in so many ways, when you look at their lives, you see that these obligations, these extra things that Allah put in the plate of a believer, is more challenges for him, is more hardship and difficulties for him. Why is he doing this? Because Allah regards you as capable of doing it. He regards you that you are able to do it. That's why He is giving you it. This extra job that we have, He gives it to you because you are capable. You can do it. That's why He's giving it to you, because He wants to put you in an accelerated program. He says, listen, you're in this program. Right? You're in the IB program. You're in the honors program. And I'll give you more workload because you can do it. You see, we should be proud of the fact that Allah has regarded us capable, and He has given us these duties, and He has given us this ma'rifah and understanding that we have these obligations on us. So when a person who is able to do great, now when you want to teach him, then simple lessons don't work with believers. Simple lessons don't work with believers. Understand a quality that's inside of you. Simple lessons. If I tell you, listen, don't smoke pot. You know, you be okay. You know, but still, you know, temptation is there. If I say to you simple things, you know, the way in which a person who's a genius works, or a person who has greater ability works, is that if you give him simple tasks, he finds it very sluggish to do those tasks because they're too simple for him, too easy for him. You know, for example, you know, you have a person who works out all the time. He's able to bench like 300 pounds, and then you tell him, listen, here's 100 pounds, start with that. What? 100 pounds, and you're like, it's nothing, you know? And you know what? That person is, you know, truly feeling lazy to do it. He can do it, but it's too easy for him. That's why he doesn't feel like doing it. But if you say, listen, you do 300, here's 320 for you. Right? Then he's motivated. He's like, all right, let me do this. Right? Because it's a challenge for him. He's being challenged. And hence, because he's being challenged, he wants to do it. That motivation comes inside of him. So now what happens is that if a person comes and starts giving you simple messages, listen, this is haram, stay away from this, this is this, this, stay away from that, you will be like looking at it and say, wow, this is easy. And because it's easy, you don't feel, and you don't feel motivated to take that challenge or to do that. And hence, the way that believers work is that you need to challenge them. You need to give them greater challenges and lessons that are so great that when they look up and say, wow, that looks exciting. That sounds exciting. Let me do that. Now, that mu'min feels motivated to do things. This is why you see that when Rasulullah came, he described why he came here. He described why he came here. He says, بُعِثُ لِأُتَمِّمَ مَكَارِمَ الْأَخْلَاقِ. He says that I was sent for what? I was sent to establish the higher levels of akhlaq. I was sent to establish the higher levels of akhlaq. I didn't come here to teach, be honest. I didn't come here to teach, don't steal. You can learn that at the Hindu temple. Right, I mean, you can go to a Hindu temple or any other church or synagogue where they're teaching you to steal. No one teaches you to steal. They all say, don't steal. They all say, don't lie. Aren't they saying that? I mean, if you don't trust me, you know, you can go and watch Sunday morning church shows. And tell me, what do you hear? Did you ever hear them say, steal from others? Or lie? No one says that. Everyone says, listen, don't lie, don't steal, don't do these wrong things. Right? So now did the Prophet come to teach you the same thing that they're teaching? Is it? He didn't come here to teach you the same thing that they're already teaching that. Everyone's teaching that. That's why he says, I came here to teach you the greater levels of akhlaq. I came here to teach you the higher levels of akhlaq. That means that I came here so that I can be useful for you who want to be great. You want to be great, then I'm here to give you an example for that. See, Rasulullah came for believers who want to excel because they're able to excel. He came for believers so that when you want to become great, then you come to Rasulullah. If you are stuck at simple lessons, then you can still watch the Sunday morning show and learn from them. But once you decide that, listen, no, this is not for me. I want to become great. I want to become something special. Then you come to Rasulullah and then he becomes the example for you. So, this ithar, my friends, this is what I want to explain, inshallah. Let's go into it without any further ado. What is ithar? Ithar has two elements. Ithar means to sacrifice what you have and give it to others. Has two elements. The first element of ithar is giving. That a person must give. He must give what he has. Giving has different levels. Let me just take you to those levels. What is ithar when it comes to giving? Giving has different levels. The first level of giving is when you have something that you don't want. When you have something that you don't want, that is extra for you. It's not needed, nor is it wanted. For example, you get a check of, let's say, whatever. And out of that check, there are certain needs. You pay your mortgage, you pay installment, you pay utilities, and this and that, your bills, what you need, right? Then you have some extra money left over, and that goes to your entertainment budget. So, you know, you say this much entertainment and this and that, this and that. Now, when all of that is done, you know, when all the entertainment is done and everything useless you want to do is done, then you see something left over. And you're like, man, I still have money left over. You know, after doing all of that, I still have something left over. Then you say, okay, you know what? Maybe I'll give it to the masjid. All right? We give this to the masjid. Right? So what happened is that this money that's left over after all your expenses and after all your entertainment, everything vain and useless that you want to do is left over. It's so additional that, you know, it's not even wanted by you. If you give that away to someone else, that's also giving. That is giving. But this giving is called sadaqah. This giving is called sadaqah, charity. You know, given charity, you give donations. What is this donation? This is something that is so additional, so extra for you that you don't have any need of it, you have no wanting of it, it's just lying there and you want to get rid of it. This is called sadaqah. Now even in Islam, sadaqah is a very good thing. It's emphasized. Allah says if you give sadaqah, so much reward for it. Sadaqato yarubbul bala. That if you give charity, it drives away afflictions and suffering. So many hadiths are there that you read. You know, I saw the IOC donation box. It's written over there. You can read that. You know, it's available downstairs. You can go there and check it out, some hadiths from that, right? What is this sadaqah? Sadaqah is not your mortgage money. I'm giving away your mortgage money. Neither your entertainment money. Right, you're giving away something that's completely unnecessary for you. Completely unwanted for you. This is called sadaqah, when you give sadaqah. Right? But then, when you go to the next level, it's a little bit harder. That's why you see, sadaqah, everyone does it. Right? Many people do it. If you can't do sadaqah, then you are truly a miser. You're really a miser if you can't do sadaqah. I mean, if you can't give away that which is not wanted by you, not needed, not required by you, then you know what? That just plain, you know. But that's why you see everyone does sadaqah, right? I mean, everyone, you see, kuffar, everyone, they give. Right? Why? Because it's extra for them. It's very additional for them. Now, when you go on one step above, then you see it becomes a little bit harder. A little bit harder. Allah says in the Quran, He says, لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مَا تُحِبُّونَ He says, okay, you give sadaqah. But Allah is saying, you can never attain birr. You can never attain birr until you give away what you love. Until you give away what you are in love with. So now when you want to give away clothes, you know, you see, oh, this is worn out. You know, you look at this shirt, this is worn out. This is worn out, you know. I don't need this, I don't want this. Let me give this away to the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army, you know. This and that. Now, tell me, would you, now when you're looking at your shirt, then you come across your Armani suit, you know? I love this suit, you know? So many memories in this suit. I love it, you know? Now, are you going to throw that away? No, it won't go. You see, now, if it's something you love, right? It's something that you're attached to. If you're attached to this, and it's, you know, important for you, when you start to give away those things, then Allah is saying, listen, now you have reached the level of birr. You see, birr is a level above sadaqah. Birr is a level above sadaqah. Now you can do some birr also if you move forward, you know. Let's come move forward, you know. And more people are waving from the back, you know, so they want to get in, so the door is blocked. Salawat. Right? So what is birr, my friends? Birr is when you give away something that you love. Something that you love. Look at the things that you have and see, what do I love in the things that I have? And imagine yourself giving those things away. Can you do that? Do you have the ability to do that? You see, this was the difference between, Habil and Qabil. Right? Habil and Qabil, right, the children of Adam. The difference between them was that when Allah asked them for a sacrifice, so both of them went home to get something to sacrifice for Allah. So when Qabil came home, he said, honey, where's the trash? You know, remember those things that we don't need? You know, get everything out that we don't need here. Right? Because it's all going out for donation. Right? So, that was Qabil's attitude, right? He got out things, so he was giving sadaqah. He was giving sadaqah. But when Habil came home, he was looking at the best things that he had, the things that he loved the most. He said, Allah is asking for it. I want to give that which I love the most to Allah. You see, now when he gave that which he loved the most, then you see, it became birr. So that's why, you see, Habil's sacrifice was accepted because that was birr. Qabil was rejected because that was sadaqah. See the difference between the two. So now this is bir. Bir is that which you love. Can you give that away? You see, very few people can do that. I can hear the sounds from the audience, you know, shaking their heads. It's hard. It's not easy to give away what you love. It's not easy, my friends. If you can give away what you love, then you have achieved the level of bir. You have attained the level of bir. You have understood until here? Yes? All right, then send a loud salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, ajil farajahum.
Now, if you thought that was hard, let's go to the next level. Let's go to the next level. Now, it's not about what you love now. It's not additional. It's not about what you love. Now the next level is when you give away what you need. Now you give away what you need, what you require. What do you require? Your mortgage money? Give it away. What do you require? Your life? Are you ready to give that? My friends, when you are ready to give away to others what you need in your own life, this is called ithar. This is called ithar. Not giving away what is additional, not giving away even that which you love, but what you need and require in your life. When you are ready to give away what you need in your life, this is called ithar. In order to be with Imam Hussein in Karbala, you are required to have ithar. If you do not have ithar, there is no way that you can reach Karbala. There is no way you can reach Karbala. You can accidentally find your way there. But as soon as you see what Imam Hussein requires of you, you will be running away. My friends, the battle of Imam Hussein in Karbala, that's what we are talking about. In Karbala, what do we learn from Imam Hussein? Ithar. The battle of Karbala was not a battle of politics. It wasn't a battle of politics. Yes, what led to Karbala was politics. What brought Imam Hussein to Karbala was politics. But in Karbala, the battle was not about politics. The battle was about akhlaq. The battle was about character. Imam Hussein wanted character in Karbala. Even if you're politically right and leave Karbala, if your akhlaq and character is not good, you cannot stand with Hussein. If the character is not good, you can't stand with Hussein. This is why when you look at Karbala and when you want to learn the lessons of Karbala and when you want to see what ithar is, ithar, my friends, is very difficult. And this is why you see that its first element is giving. Giving away what you require, what you need. Yes, you don't do it all the time. In the hadith we have that even once in your life, if you have done ithar, it is said that even if once, if you do ithar in your life, once you gave away that which you needed for another believer, even if you do it once, Allah says, Istahayaitu, I am ashamed to take account of that person. I am ashamed to take account of that person who has done ithar in his life, who has given away what he requires in his life. I'm ashamed to take his account. How can I take his account when he is giving it away for another believer? This, my friends, is ithar. And watch this. This ithar of this giving away, if you want to know more about it, I'll go into a little bit more detail. A little bit more irfani detail. Right? So you understand why this giving away is so exciting. Send a lot of salawats. My friend, when we and look at our relationship with Allah, who are we to Allah? What do we think of ourselves? Are we servants of Allah? Is that right? You're right, right? We are servants of Allah. That's how we think, right? We are servants of Allah. I am abd. Allah, I am your abd. So if I am abd, what is Allah? Allah is ma'bud, Rabb, Malik, Master, Lord, right? I am servant and slave. I am servant and slave. You are the master. You are Malik. You are the owner. Right? That's how I see myself. I see myself as an abd, and I see Allah as Malik and master. Right? Because I see myself as abd, and because I see Allah as master. Now, that is the asl. And when I see Allah, I look at Him as master. Allah, you know, being a master, being an owner, being a malik looks good on you. It looks befitting on you. When I look at myself, I'm an abd. And being a slave looks good on me. You know, if I had the collar of a slave, the collar of a slave looks good on me. It looks befitting. That's what should fit me. But if Allah gives you something, He's giving you something. He says, take this. So now, what happened? This thing that we have belongs to Allah. Whatever He gives you. Whatever. Money, wealth, house, whatever He gives you, right? He gives you something. Let's say it's a simple thing. He gives you a ring. Where did you get that ring? Did you make it yourself? Did you create it? No? So who gave it to you? Where did you get it from? Allah gave it to you, right? It comes from Allah. Whatever blessing you have came from Allah. So when you get a blessing, now that ring belongs to you. Now what happens, you see, is this. Me being an abd looks at that ring and says, I became the owner of this. I became the owner of this, and this abd, the slave, now starts to detest the fact that I became an owner, because being an owner doesn't look good on me. Allah, I don't look good with this. This looks good on you, so what happens? I take it off and I say, Allah, this belongs to you. I want to give it back in your way. I give it away. An abd, because he sees him as an abd, himself as an abd, doesn't like it when he becomes the owner or master of something. He doesn't like it when he becomes the owner and master of something. That's why whenever he gets something, he is in a hurry to give it back. He's in a haste to give it back. He doesn't want it. I don't want it, Allah. Just look at me. You know, there's a dua that you are taught in Sunday schools. A dua that you are taught in Sunday schools, right? You know, I mean, as a kid you learned it. Maybe you might have memorized it also. Very simple dua. It says, Raditu billahi rabban. I am happy, I am satisfied to see Allah as Lord, as Rabb. I am Ravi, I am satisfied to see Allah as Rabb. So Allah, if you are Rabb, being a Rabb is suitable on you, not on me. Being a Malik looks good on you, not on me. When I become Malik, there's something wrong in creation here. It shouldn't be. You should be the Malik. Hence what happens is that whenever Allah gives, now Allah is saying, listen, take it, I'm giving it to you. So when an abd takes it, he's like, a lot, but you know, I want to give it back to you a lot. It doesn't look good on me. He gives it back. There are two states, my friends. There's two states in this. You know what those states are? You see, either you have or you don't have, right? Is there another state in the middle that I'm missing? No, right? Either you have or you don't have. If you don't have, it means Allah didn't give you. If you have, it means Allah blessed you. So when Allah blesses you, it means you have. When you don't have it, it means that Allah hasn't given it to you. There are only two states. And in our whole life, we are making a journey between these two states. We are going from having to not having, and from not having to having. When we go from the state of not having to having, it means that Allah needs to bless us. When Allah blesses us, so what do we do? What do we do? If Allah gives you a blessing, what do? Shukr. Right? You do shukr. You say Allah shukr. You thank Him. Because Allah bless you. Now tell me, if Allah blesses you, is there a pleasure in that? Be honest. Yes, it is. It is pleasurable. You know, when Allah gives a person a blessing, what? Are you going to be upset? Why are you giving? No, you said thank you, right? You will say thank you. So it is a pleasure to get something from Allah. Right? Now when you make the other journey backwards, now you want to give it in Allah's way. You see, what happens, my brother, is this. There's a pleasure in that also. There's a pleasure in that also when you give it back. When you go from having to not having. How do you go there? When you give it back. Now, if you don't give it back, it's taken away from you. So what happened is that we, unfortunately, those who don't have marifat, at this level, they say, oh, inshallah, you know, Allah is testing us. Or if they're a little bit stronger, they'll say, inshallah, you know, Allah will give it back. You know, I'll give an example so you understand better. If you send loud salawats. You know, you come to the majlis, the hall is packed, and all of a sudden, I've seen this happen, that's what I'm saying to you, right? All of a sudden, the management, they come out with a surprise fundraiser. Right? It happened to me before, right? I was stopped in the middle of the speech, Maulana, stop for a minute, we're going to do a fundraiser right here, on the spot. You know? But everyone knows, whenever you announce a fundraiser, people are waiting outside or they're not here. They know that we'll go after the fundraiser. They come late. So everyone knows that, the management knew that. So after everyone came to the majlis, and the majlis is hot and exciting, and then they say, alright, Maulana, time for fundraiser. You know, I get down and they start a fundraiser. And people are like, hey, what is it? So now, we have a surprise fundraiser. And in that fundraiser, one of the brothers, you know, gets excited. He's already excited with the speech. So now he's like, alright, you know what? You know, I will give. So he writes a hefty check. You know, he writes out a hefty check and he gives it. Now he gives the hefty check. So now, he didn't take advice from his home minister yet. And his finance minister and, you know, foreign minister and every minister, you know. The whole government, you know. You know, he didn't take advice from the government yet. So now what happens is that when he writes the check out on the way back home, he gives the news. And honey, listen, I wrote a check out. And she's like, what? You wrote a check out? How much did you write it for? It's not that much, don't worry, you know. Then finally, he, you know, gives it up and says, okay, it's this much. Are you crazy? You know, this is for this, this is for that, and then, you know, all the argument happens, and now, how does he pacify his wife? You see, how do you pacify his wife? Listen, inshallah, listen, Allah's way, Allah will give us more. Right? Allah will give us more, don't worry, Allah is going to give us more. Now, tell me, is that the giving of a person who has ithar? Understand this, my friends, very well. Yes, Allah will give you more, but are you expecting more? Why do you want more from Allah? Why do you want to be owner? Why do you want to be Malik? Don't you like Allah being Malik? You see how we deal with these situations. Our dealing with such things is very shallow. Gave it in Allah's way? Listen, it looks better on Allah. Allah should have it. I want to give it to Allah. My friends, there's a pleasure in giving also. Right? I gave because I wanted to feel the pleasure of giving. I wanted to give because I want to feel that pleasure. Now, because we only felt one pleasure in life, and that is just receiving the blessings of Allah. So we think receiving blessings is a pleasure. But those who have experienced both the pleasures, receiving and giving, they understand that giving has more pleasure than receiving. They know that giving has more pleasure than receiving. That's why you see them giving more and receiving less. That's why every time Imam Ali al-Islam used to make a well, dig a well, you know, whatever you dig a well is yours. Because you dug it. You work for it, it's yours. So whenever Imam Ali used to dig a well, even before the sweat is wiped from his brows, he used to give it over to someone else's ownership. Ibn Abbas used to tell Imam Ali, Imam Ali, wait until you finish your chai. No. Not even that much. No, I want to give it away. Why? I don't want anything in my name. I want to give it away in Allah's way. Why? Because those who know the pleasure of giving know that when you give in Allah's way, there's more pleasure. There's pleasure in that. And you miss it when you aren't able to give. That's why whenever they get something, they're in a hurry to give it away in Allah's way. Allah, take it. Please take it. This, my friends, is the reason. When you do ithar, why ithar is so easy for these people is because they know that when you give in Allah's way, you want to feel that pleasure, that exhilaration that comes about when you give it back to Allah. There's more pleasure in that. Really, there's more pleasure in that. If we can just feel that pleasure, then we'll say that Allah, you know, really, when you give a blessing, you want to give it back. This is ithar. La ilaha illallah. Ibrahim was told to sacrifice his son. Ibrahim was told to sacrifice his son, Ismail. He brought Ismail to the altar of sacrifice, blindfolded himself, took the knife in his hand, made the complete intention of sacrifice, and started to sacrifice. Jibreel came and switched Ismail with the sheep. So instead of Ismail, the sheep was slaughtered. Why? He slaughtered the sheep. Blindfolds were open. Ibrahim sees there's a sheep bleeding and Ismail is standing next to him. He looks at Ismail, looks at the sheep. Allah tells Ibrahim, we have accepted your sacrifice, Ibrahim. Thank you very much. You may go now. Understand this, my friends. This is Ibrahim. He's not, there's a reason why he became Khalilullah. He's a friend of Allah for a reason. Huh? I mean, he looks at Ismail, and Ismail is saved, right? But his son is not sacrificed. His son is not dead. So how should Ibrahim deal with this? How should Ibrahim deal with this? Ibrahim tells Ismail, I mean, it's over. Allah said, Allah, what happened? He said, I accepted it. Don't worry, go. I've accepted it from you. Good job. You have done a good job, Ibrahim. Ibrahim tells Ismail, okay, go back home, son. Go back home. Ismail goes away. Ismail goes away, and Ibrahim goes behind the mountain where no one can see him, and he starts crying. He starts crying. Tears are rolling down his cheek. And Allah asks him, Ibrahim, what happened? We accepted it from you. Why are you crying now? He said, but Allah, I mean, what happened? I thought you wanted this from me. He says, but you have done your job. We are happy with you. He said, but Allah, I wanted to give him back to you. What happened, Allah? I wanted to give him back to you. I mean, why didn't it work the way it was supposed to work? Why do you want to give him back to me? You're old man, he's your only son. I kept him for you. He said, no, Allah, but you asked for him. I wanted to give him back to you. Understand this, the reason why Ibrahim is Khalilullah. You see that pleasure that Ibrahim is saying, Allah, he belongs to you more than me. He belongs to you. Ibrahim couldn't handle it. He started crying. He was disturbed. He was disturbed. He started crying. So Allah sent Jibreel and said, Ibrahim, let me show you something. Let me show you something so your mind will be put at ease. Your mind will be put at ease. So there was a window that was open for Ibrahim. There was a window that was open for Ibrahim. Ibrahim looked through that window. And all of a sudden, his eyes fell on a face that was so beautiful. His eyes fell on a face that was so beautiful that he was captivated by it. Whoever was in that image, he was just captivated. He forgot about Ismail. He was captivated. And now different tears, tears of joy, tears are flowing from his cheek of complete exhilaration of looking at this face. Ibrahim is saying that, Ya Allah, who is this that I've fallen in love just by looking at his face? Just by looking at him, I have fallen in love with him. Who is this in this image that I see? Who is this? Allah says, don't worry, Ibrahim. This is from your children. His name is Hussein ibn Ali. You know, he looks at Hussein. He looks at Hussein and he has forgotten about his son. He looks at Hussein very carefully. He has fallen in love with Imam Hussein. Ibrahim has fallen in love with Imam Hussein. And he follows Hussein. Whatever he saw in that image, I don't know what he saw, but he followed Imam Hussein. He followed him until Hussein reached the place where he fell from the horse on Ashura. Ibrahim looks at that and the expression changes in his face. And he sees Hussein falling down from the horse, and Ibrahim looks at Imam Hussein and he sees Imam Hussein falling down, and then his heart now has completely changed. His emotions have completely changed. Now he is crying and tears are flowing from his eyes. Tears are flowing from his eyes. And he looks at what happens. I don't know how much he saw, and I don't know what the extent of the vision that he saw in that scene. But I can just say this much, that after watching that, Ibrahim, whenever he used to look at Ismail, he would be crying for Imam Hussein. Maybe he remembered when Ismail told him that, Father, when you slaughter me, Father, when you cut my head, Father. Father, don't cut me from my throat. Cut me from the backside, Father. Cut me from the backside, Father. Don't cut my throat, Father. Maybe he saw inside that vision when Shimon was sitting on the neck of Imam Hussein. Ibrahim, did you also see Hussein by the side of Ali Akbar? Hussein, did you see, Ibrahim, did you see Hussein by the side of Ali Akbar? He was by the side of Ali Akbar, and then he was taking the spear from the chest of Ali Akbar. You know how hard it was for Hussein? Ibrahim saw that maybe, and that's why, after seeing that, he could never cry for Ismail. He could never show that affection for Ismail. He said, Ismail, no, Hussein is Ismail. My friends, when a person is giving, when a person does Isar, he wants to give away. He wants to give away everything that he has. He wants to give away everything that he has. But you know what? When you look at the Isar of Ahlul Bayt, now you see what kind of giving did they give. What kind of giving did they give? Everyone gave in Karbala. Everyone gave in Karbala. Today when we remember Karbala, 40 days later after Ashura, when we remember Ashura, how each and every person was giving himself up for the other. Everyone was giving himself up for the other. How much they were giving for Hussein. How much they were giving for each other. You know, there was a place, imagine what kind of emotion that they had. A companion of Imam Hussein, he was doing guard duty outside on the night of Ashura. You know, he was going around, he was picking up the bushes. He was clearing the bushes around. I mean, really, in a war, you don't want to clear the bushes because the horses could come in and the enemies could attack easily. But he was clearing the bushes. Imam Hussein came to him and said, what are you doing? He says, Mawla, I'm clearing the bushes here. He says, why are you clearing those bushes? Because I heard you say that tomorrow these children are going to be running in the desert. I don't want them to step on any thorns in these bushes. Maybe they'll get hurt. I'm making sure that they don't get hurt tomorrow when we die. You see this emotion. But now when you look at Imam Sajjad, now it's a completely different. When you see Imam Sajjad, it's completely different. Now you see how Imam Sajjad dealt with hardships. Imam Sajjad, you know, on Shami Ghariba, when he was woken up, you know, he was taken out of his tent. He was still in such a state of unconsciousness that he couldn't get up. Zainab had to carry Imam Sajjad. Zainab carried Imam Sajjad on her back. Zainab is old, she's not young. Zainab is in her 50s, she's not young. She carried Imam Sajjad out of a burning tent. And then she brought him out in the desert and laid him on the ground outside, in the sand outside. Imam Sajjad, when he came outside, what can he do now? He sees the head of his father on the spear. He sees the dead bodies lying on the battlefield. He just looks at that. And thus, he says to Allah, Allah, let me give shukr to what you have given us. You gave a shahadat, I'm giving shukr. And that sajda he went into of shukr was so long that it lasted the whole night of Sham-e-Ghariba. Until the next day, Imam Sajjad did not get up from his sajda. He did not get up from prostration the way he was. He wasn't so much engrossed in thanking Allah for what Allah has given them, for what Allah has done to them. The only time he was woken up was when they came to arrest him. They picked him up and they shackled him. You know how they shackled Imam Sajjad? You know how they shackled Imam? Just take your minds to Karbala and just imagine Imam Sajjad is alone here. He's alone. He only has ladies around him, their children around him. There are no men who would come there to help him, or to help him get up, or to help him take care of himself, to mend himself. No one is taking care of him. Imam Sajjad is, he is forcibly stood up. And the shackles that are put on his feet, the shackles that are put, the chains that are put on his hand, and then there's a neck brace that is put on his neck. It's made of wood, and they put the neck brace on his neck, and when they put the neck brace there, it's loose. So what happens is that the neck brace falls down. The neck brace falls down. When it falls down, they are looking for a means to make sure that it doesn't fall down. You know what they do? They put the neck brace on, and they drive the nails into his flesh. They drive nails into his flesh so that that neck brace could be taken there. Imam Sajjad, he's going through that pain. He's going through the pain, but Imam Sajjad, not even a wince did he show. He didn't even show any movement, no grimace of pain, nothing like that. Imam Sajjad is holding himself up. He's holding himself up. And now they make him walk in that situation. You know, Imam Sajjad is sick. And so what happened is that they make him walk. When they make him walk, because of his natural disposition of illness, and he is weak, he's unable to walk that much. So he will walk a few steps and he will fall down. You know, he will fall down. So when he falls down, they will start whipping him until he gets up again. They'll say, get up, and they'll whip him and they'll lash him until Imam Sajjad gets up again. And when he gets up again, he will walk a few more steps until he falls down again. And again, they will start beating him up. They will start beating him up like that. And then when he starts walking, they will put thorns in his way. And these thorns are put in his way. And they start to see that these thorns, as he walks over those thorns, and they go into the sole of his feet. Each thorn that goes there is stinging him. Imam Sajjad just keeps on walking. He keeps on walking. He doesn't stop. His feet are bleeding now. And again, when he falls down, they come and beat him up again to get up. In that while, as Imam Sajjad is watching, what happens is that Sakina is watching him. When Sakina is watching him, every time Imam Sajjad faces some pain or torture, Sakina cries more, and she is being affected by this. She's being affected by this. And you know what the worst thing happened? The worst thing happened was this, that Shimr noticed that. Shimr noticed that. He came and he said, what's your relationship with that man? What's your relationship with that man? And when he found out that this is the sister of Imam Sajjad. Now you know what happened after that, when he got that information. You know what happened? Whenever Imam Sajjad used to fall down, and a time came when he wasn't able to get up, he was too weak to get up. So now, he would try to get up, but he couldn't. His health is not with him. He's so weak that he's unable to get up. So Shimr would come there and says, listen, I know how to make him get up. He would go to Sakina, and he would stand in front of her, and he would start slapping her in the face. He would start slapping her in her face. He says, I will keep on slapping her until he gets up. Imam Sajjad would do all that he could to get up. He would muster up the courage and the strength to get up. He doesn't want Sakina to be hurt. And he would keep himself up now. Imam Sajjad is forcing himself to be up and not to fall down. Because every time after that they fell down, they would go and beat Sakina in order to make Imam Sajjad work. This relationship of Imam Sajjad and Sakina in this journey is a very special relationship, my friend. It's a very special relationship. Sakina couldn't cry for Imam Sajjad openly, nor could she go to him. All Sakina was looking for was someone that she can hug and say, what happened to us? What happened to my father? What happened to my brothers? What happened to my cousins? What happened to Qasim and Muhammad? Where have they gone? She just wants to asked him questions. She's only 4 years old, for God's sakes. She's only 4 years old. What is wrong? Why can't he have these questions? Why can't he get someone to put her head on his chest and just say, please just hold me tight so I can feel that someone is loving me. You know what happened? This caravan was being taken as prisoners, and when they would come to these stops, and at these stops, at night, they would make the women huddle in one place. Imam Sajjad would sit to the side. They would chain him up, his hands, so his hands don't move, so he can't run away. So they would make him go and sit in one place and chain him up over there. They would feed, and they would keep the ladies in one place, huddle all the ladies and girls and everyone, and the children. And then the men would go away in their tents and do their revelry at night, whatever they're doing. And then after they go to sleep, and the women are tired from the day's journey, they also go to sleep. Sakina is seemingly asleep. She waits until everyone is asleep. You know what Sakina does? Sakina now wakes up, sees that everyone is asleep, and then she slowly starts to crawl. She starts to crawl so that no one gets up. She would crawl through the ladies. She would crawl on the ground until she comes to Imam Sajjad. And then she would come to Imam Sajjad. She would pick up his feet and put her in her little lap. And then she would cry over his feet so that her tears can moisten the legs and the bruises and the cuts on the legs. And she would start wiping away the blood from the feet, and she would take out all the thorns that are stick inside. They would shake the thorns out, and she would look at Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad's hands are tied. He would look at Sakina as if to say, Sakina, if my arms were open, I would give you a hug right now, Sakina. Sakina, I want to tell you that I'm here for you, but what can I do? And his brother is so helpless. He can't do anything to do anything for you. Sakina would take that out, and she would come to Imam Sajjad. She would hug him in his chest, and she would cry on his shoulder. Imam Sajjad would let her cry. One of these nights, when she cried aloud, someone saw her, and they came to Sakina, and they came to them and said, what's going on here? She said, you're crying for Hussain. Don't you know it's kufr to cry for him? Then they started to beat Sakina from the back. They started whipping her in the back. Imam Sajjad shouted out, don't hit her. Hit me as much as you want. I will take the pain for her. الذين ظلموا أيهم انقلبا ينقلبون فاطمة حسين يا حسين
يا حسين Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein.